So, confession. I am a recovering perfectionist. What? Surprise! I know,
right? The first step is
Wait a minute,
admitting.
anyone else here?
Not recovering.
No. I know, I'm maybe not either. At least I saw a couple of hands. Growing up in Germany and England, which are two very exacting cultures, I believe that being anything short of a perfect, good, obedient, high-achieving girl would not be good enough. Subconsciously, I think I was scared that without that perfection, I would actually be unlovable. So it made sense to learn to hide the less favorable parts of myself, the parts that I fear would be rejected, to stay safe and be accepted. But as I've aged and hopefully grown a little wiser, I've come to realize that unless we bring those hidden, denied parts of ourselves out of the shadow to the surface, perhaps even welcome and include them lovingly as part of who we are, we can never truly be ourselves or authentic. You can take me off the screen here if possible. It's kind of weird to see myself in quadruplets. Or indeed, be loved for who we really are. And we're always going to act consciously or unconsciously to cover up parts of ourselves that we feel ashamed or afraid of. And we'll be less than authentic to protect our image and keep others at a distance. And that really doesn't make for intimate connections or internal well-being. So embracing our shadow, the less lovable sides of ourselves, is important also because only when we're willing to accept all parts of ourselves can we truly accept and love others as they are. Because otherwise, we're always going to be bothered by and judgmental of the less lovely parts of others, because they reflect the disowned parts of ourselves. Does that make sense? So we talk a lot about justice in our congregation, but compassion is also a key part of our mission statement, as you see up there. So we do this in the spirit of deepening compassion. For as we learn to accept ourselves, we also expand our capacity to hold space for others with love and grace. The poet Rosemary Wattala Tromer wrote a beautiful poem explaining just this very thing in her Letter to Parts of Me That I Have Tried to Exile. Here's the poem. I'm sorry. I thought banishing you was the way to become better, more perfect, more good, more free. The irony, I thought if I cut you off and cast you out, if I built walls high enough, then the parts left would be more whole. As if the sweet orange doesn't need the toughened rind or the bitter seed. As if the forest doesn't need the blue fury of fire. It didn't work, did it, the exile? You were always there, jangling the hinges, banging at the door, whispering through the cracks. Left to myself, I wouldn't have known to take down the walls, nor would I have had the strength to do so. That act was grace disguised as disaster. But now that the walls are rubble, it is also grace that teaches me to want to embrace you. Grace that guides me to be gentle, even with the part of me that would still try to exile any other part. It is grace that invites me to name all parts beloved. How honest it all is, how human. I promise to keep learning how to know you as my own, to practice opening to what at first feels unwanted, meet it with understanding. Trust all belongs. And welcome you home. So, my friends, perhaps our journey towards wholeness within is not arriving at an ideal of perfection, but rather an invitation to embrace all of who we are. But how do we actually take that step of welcoming the shadowed parts of ourselves, the aspects we often wish to exile, hide, or deny? Well, Rosemary Wattola Trauma speaks to the deep human tendency to reject the parts of ourselves that feel unworthy, broken, or unacceptable. And her poem begins with an apology, a recognition that for so long we have sought to banish parts of ourselves in pursuit of a better, purer, more free existence. And I think we do that a lot as Unitarian Universalists, don't we? Working so hard to be the best versions of ourselves, the best justice advocates, the best in everything we do. But it speaks to the false promise that many of us have bought into, that wholeness comes from cutting away or denying what we deem unworthy, rather than integrating and honoring all of who we are. Carl Jung, the great psychologist, wrote extensively about what he called the shadow, those parts of ourselves that we push into the unconscious because they seem just too dark or too unruly or too painful to face. And these shadows can take many forms: fear, anger, shame, insecurity, or grief. Or as the Catholic Church would call them, the seven deadly sins of pride, greed, wrath, envy, lust, gluttony, and sloth. But what if these are not sins, and instead they're an adaptive survival mechanism? Jung says we disown them because we believe that they make us less lovable, less acceptable, and less worthy of belonging. And of course, many of us are conditioned from childhood to seek approval and avoid rejection. Anybody here? We're taught to show our best selves, to strive for goodness, to be diligent and smooth over any of our rough edges. And yet, those exiled parts never truly leave us. Like Rosemary says, you were always here, jangling the hinges, banging at the door, whispering through the cracks. Am I right? No matter how high we build the walls, no matter how strong our defenses, our shadowed parts find a way of making themselves known. No matter how much we try to hide them, they seep out for others to notice in broad daylight. You might have felt this in your own life. Anyone? Yeah. Maybe anger flares up when you least expect it, or shame paralyzes you in a quiet moment. Or perhaps fear holds you back even when you long to step forward, or you try to please incessantly so that no one gets upset with you or gets to see the real you underneath. And other times, resistance or defensiveness assert themselves to keep us safe. And we can spend years, decades even, running from ourselves only to discover that what we push away continues to shape our lives in unseen ways. And the harder we resist, the more control our shadow seems to have. You remember that old saying, what we resist persists. Yeah. But often, life has a way of humbling us, doesn't it? The walls we build eventually crack, and the strategies that once kept us safe no longer serve us. And sometimes that collapse comes through crisis, a loss, a betrayal, an illness, or failure of some kind. And other times it arrives through the slow realization that we are exhausted from trying to hold ourselves together in a way that denies our truth. Anyone ever felt exhausted by that? Yeah. So Rosemary Watolo Trauma tells us that this is grace disguised as disaster. So what if the moments we see as our undoing are actually our initiation into wholeness? What if the parts of ourselves that we have exiled are not our enemies, but our teachers? It is grace that brings down the walls, grace that allows us to finally face what we have feared for so long. And as we stand in the rubble, there's another grace waiting for us. The grace that teaches us how to embrace, how to be gentle, even with the parts of ourselves that still resist belonging. It is grace that allows us to love the least lovable parts of ourselves and one another. And this is the paradox of healing, that the path to wholeness is not through rejection, but through radical acceptance of ourselves and one another. It is only when we turn toward our own wounds with love and care that we begin to transform them. And it is only when we stop running from ourselves that we may find peace. One of my favorite writers, Elizabeth Gilbert, has studied this a lot. And she says that the most peaceful and wise people that I know are the ones who've created enough internal space to be able to allow all parts of themselves to coexist, despite the contradictions. So they have room for their creativity, and they also have room for their fear. They have room for their dignity, and they also have room for their shame. They have room for the parts of themselves that are glorious and divine and wonderful, and they have room for the parts of themselves that are petty and jealous and ridiculous. Right? Like they create this big, huge auditorium of a landscape inside themselves, and they don't kick any parts out because guess what? You can't. Now, some of you may be familiar with the psychological model internal family systems theory, or IFS for short, which is a powerful way to approach this journey of integration. It involves understanding the self as made up of various parts, each with its own voice, emotions, and purpose. So IFS teaches us that rather than trying to silence or exile the parts of us that feel wounded or disruptive, we can learn to listen to them with curiosity and compassion and invite them in. In IFS, our inner world consists of parts that have developed over time to help us navigate life. And some of these parts, like our inner critic, for example, may appear really harsh or judgmental, while others, like our exiled wounds, may carry deep pain. But every part of us, no matter how difficult, has a role in our lives and a story. And the work of healing is not to push these parts away or suppress them, but to understand them and to offer them care and to invite them to express themselves and then to reintegrate them into our sense of self. And if you haven't explored IFS yet, I encourage you to take a look. We studied it at one of our ministers' conferences, and it's been remarkably helpful in my life, and I know some of my fellow ministers too. And this perspective aligns beautifully with this month's theme of inclusion. Because just as we strive to build communities that welcome all people, so too must we build an internal world that welcomes all parts of ourselves. When we recognize that each part of us is seeking belonging, we shift from self-rejection to self-compassion. We learn that our fear is trying to protect us, that our anger is signaling unmet needs, and our sadness is a longing for connection. So by bringing awareness and love to all aspects of ourselves, we create an inner wholeness that naturally extends outwards. And when we practice internal inclusion, we become more capable of holding space for others, seeing their struggles with the same grace and compassion that we offer ourselves. In the framework of psychologist and self-compassion expert, Dr. Kristin Neff, and I encourage you to explore her work if you haven't already, self-compassion consists of three elements. First of all, self-kindness. Secondly, common humanity. And thirdly, mindfulness. Self-kindness means offering ourselves gentleness rather than harsh judgment. Common humanity reminds us that struggle is universal, that we are never alone in our suffering and others struggle just like we do. And mindfulness allows us to witness our pain without being consumed by it. It helps us become aware of what is driving us. My friends, we endeavor to build and create beloved community here at Chalice, don't we? We strive to be compassionate. But it has to start within. To name all parts of ourselves beloved, that is the invitation. To see our own fears, our own flaws and struggles, not as proof of our inadequacy, but as part of what makes us deeply human. The work of self-compassion is not about excusing harmful behavior or resigning ourselves to suffering. Rather, it is about understanding and holding ourselves with the same tenderness we would offer a dear friend. It is about recognizing that we are worthy of love, not in spite of our imperfections, but because of them. So I wonder, can we learn to speak to ourselves with kindness when we fall short? Is anyone up to trying that? Can we acknowledge that making mistakes or being less than perfect does not make us unworthy? Very hesitant. Can we meet our shame or brokenness with curiosity instead of condemnation? Can we lovingly laugh with and about our flaws? I know I need help with that. But I just did it. These are the questions that self-compassion invites us to ask. These are ways for us to grow more loving, and I know that is the core of our faith and who we strive to be. And as we do this work within ourselves, my friends, we create a ripple effect in the world around us. For just as we exile parts of ourselves, so too do we exile others. When we judge harshly, when we hold grudges, when we divide the world into us and them, we are often reacting from the same wounds we carry within. So the more we can accept our own humanity in these divided times, the more we can accept the humanity and flaws in others. And the more we can forgive ourselves, the more we can offer forgiveness to those around us. Like we just sang, we forgive ourselves and each other, and we begin again in love. How would it be to live into that? Moment by moment, again and again and again. So, my beloveds, I invite us to imagine a community where all parts of us are named beloved. Imagine relationships where there is space to be imperfect, space to be real. Imagine a world where we do not shame or exile each other, but instead we meet one another with grace. I know so many of us are high-achieving perfectionists. You use are renowned for that. But imagine if we gave each other permission to be imperfect, to do things wrong, to be messy, to be tired, to be grumpy and less than ideal. Yeah. This is the kind of community we are called to build. A community where authenticity is cherished, where vulnerability is honored, where mistakes are allowed, and where healing is possible. I know I have a lot to learn in this area, and it's a daily practice for me, but I would love to take it on with you. Is anyone else willing?
Amen.
Good. So I invite us to take up the practice of radical inclusion. Let us commit to knowing ourselves, to begin opening to what at first feels unwanted and meeting it with kindness and understanding. This isn't easy work at all. It requires courage and it requires patience. But my friends, it is holy work, the work of becoming whole. For without the dark, there is no light. And without the light, there is no dark. The poet's final words offer us a mantra for the journey. Trust all belongs and welcome you home. Beloveds, may we trust all belongs and step forward with compassionate hearts. May we find in our own wholeness the strength to love one another and the world more fully. And may we walk this path together, reminding one another always we are enough, just as we are. And knowing that, may we come home to ourselves and to one another. May it be so.